Hello and welcome in to another episode of Storm Surge at Carolina Hurricanes Podcast. I'm Taylor. I'm your host. I'm here with Dylan and Spencer. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Palace Point and RCE Theaters. Wow, I almost struggled with that. And Chase Given Music. We'd also like to thank the Believe Network. Do want to mention a quick note. So spoke with Chase. He has shared this on his social media, but just in case you haven't seen it, if you don't like or follow his pages, so he is all revenue from his music streaming that he's receiving. He is donating to the Hurricane Helene cleanup. So, if you haven't donated anywhere, if you feel like you can't, that's okay. Here is a very simple and great way that you can help. Just play his music, turn it on your Amazon Alexa and or your iPhone, Android, whatever you got, just turn it on, let it play. You can fall asleep to it. If you don't want to, turn the volume off and do the same thing. You can do the same thing that's what I do with our podcast when I'm going to bed. I just turn it on so we get some plays. So please do that. Please support him. And then also, just it's an easy way that you can help with that. With that tragedy, but also in other podcast news. So we are, as from this moment recording, we are 2 days from opening game. So with that, we are going to start trying to do 3 episodes a week instead of 2. We're not going to do an exact set schedule like we've been doing. Spencer being the smart man that he's come up with a recording schedule for us, that lines up the best way we can with all the games. So mostly the episodes will be releasing on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, but with some changeable days just based on schedule lineups and things like that. So if you don't see an episode on one of those days, don't worry, we'll still be putting something out. It may just, may come on a different day. We will let you know that. We'll stay on top of that as ahead of time and let you know when the next episode's coming out. So we're excited to come to you 3 times a week. That also means that episodes will probably be a little bit shorter. If you like that, please tell us. If you don't like it, tell us too. And Spencer and I are at least talkers. Dylan, it'll be more time for him to sit there, but we will try to accommodate the best that we can. So now let's get into the news. So we finally have our final roster. Both of you guys were pretty darn close on your roster speculations. They had the initial roster submitted Monday night. There was some changes after, but Spencer, you want to talk about that initial roster set?
Yeah. Yep. So the initial roster included, I think we actually talked about this Sunday. So it didn't really change much from Sunday to Monday. Pretty much the only change.
Yeah, they only had 2 changes left, or two cuts they had to make by that point.
Yep, and they actually only ended up having to make one because of the injuries that they had. So, for one, Bryce Montgomery, who we talked about being kind of a surprise as the one of the defensemen still on the roster at that point, signed his entry-level contract on Sunday. Can't remember if that was before or after we talked about it, but they were able to finagle, that sounds negative. They were able to work things out just right to where his contract plus all of the other contracts on the books minus Jackson Blake, who was the one cut from the final roster Monday, they're able to get it within $3 of the salary cap. And I don't mean $300. I don't mean $3,000. I mean, the salary cap is $88 million. They spent $87,999,997 playing the Price is Right against the rest of the league and won. the highest price without going over. And the reason they do that is because you want that initial roster to be as close to the salary cap as possible, because the way that LTIR works, long-term injured reserve, which we will be utilizing this year with Jesper Foss's injury, the way that that works is your initial pool is defined as the salary cap hit of the first player that you put on to injured reserve, long-term injured reserve, minus your cap space at the time. So because we only had $3, we're only losing out on $3 of the long-term injured reserve pool from the first person we put on there. So that's the reason why Blake was sent down rather than Montgomery, is because if it was Jackson Blake, we would have been $50,000 over the cap, and we would have zero cap space as part of starting LTIR. So we wouldn't be accruing cap space throughout the season. So some excellent financial management there from Eric Tolsky.
So we need to come up with a nickname or something for him, or for at least, you know, we can just call it Tolsky Magic, but
yeah. But, he had his right chemical formula or something.
Tolsky Intellect, but, Tolsky, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, when you got, I think he's got two doctorate degrees, so I think you can kind of figure some stuff
Dr.
out.
Dr. Tolsky.
You're that smart. Yeah. GM, or Dr. Tolsky, GM. or GM Tolsky, PhD. But anyway. So the final roster, the initial roster that was submitted on Monday night, included all three of the four forwards that we talked about last episode. So it included Lemieux, Tyson Jost, and Eric Robinson. Jackson Blake was the one sent down. But that was more of a paper transaction. As we saw yesterday, Tuesday, Jackson Blake and Bryce Montgomery switched spots. So Montgomery went down, Jackson Blake back up. They just had to get that initial roster set the way that they did for the cap space. But then again, today, it comes out that, first of all, Brendan Lemieux is going to be out for a little while after getting banged up in the last preseason game. And Tyson Jost has been placed on waivers, which kind of makes sense with the way the practice went today. He was rotating in with the defense more than anything else. Jackson Blake was getting full-time fourth-line coverage with Jack Drury and Eric Robinson. So our projected lineup ended up being pretty close. The only difference between what we projected on Monday's episode and what actually things are looking like, not just with who's on the roster, but with who is or how they're lining up. The only difference is we had Tyson Jost on the left wing of the fourth line. It's actually Eric Robinson, but not too bad, I'd say, for a guess. But Dylan, what do you think about all that?
I concur.
Elaborate.
First, I will say, if you have an interest in learning more about the salary cap and the way that stuff like that works, I don't know how many of you do, but if you go to Puckpedia, they have some pretty good articles, I guess, about different things like the way you accrue salary cap and stuff like that. So that was my first thing I wanted to say. What was your question?
What do you think about that?
What do I think about that?
What do you?
Which part specifically? I don't like remember everything you said.
Well, just in general about the rosters. Or I'll let Taylor ask questions. No, better than I am apparently.
No, I was just kidding.
I thought you just enjoyed torturing Dylan. That's what I thought this was.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm happy to see Jackson Blake back. With the NHL team, so I think that'll be fun. Hopefully, he gets good playing time, enough to justify him being here instead of in Chicago playing top line minutes, playing power play, stuff like that. Just because, you know, if he develops the way we hope, he'll be very good. So I obviously don't want to see that kind of derailed at all.
So just with that being said, if negative speculation, if he's not cutting it, how long do you think they would let it, you know, that trial last before they did send him back down? Just to see.
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a question for Rod.
Yeah.
I'll text him.
I think it depends just kind of on,
you
don't want to destroy his confidence or anything like that. The way he's looked in the preseason, I thought he was very entertaining to watch. Just, I thought he looked very comfortable, really confident. So I don't think he'll be, you know, I think it will come down to mainly how he's doing defensively and just if he's reliable enough defensively to play 10, 12 minutes a night, then I think that's fine. I don't want to see him playing, you know, 6 minutes a night and just sitting on the bench most of the time. So if it's that, I think we'll probably see if he's playing minutes like that, I would assume we'll see him going back to Chicago and maybe Tyson Jost or Lemieux when he's healthy, kind of filling in that spot. And but yeah, hopefully it works out. Hopefully he's able to develop at the NHL level, because I think he'll be fun to watch.
Agreed. Yeah, Rob Brindamore talked to Walt Ruff today about the decision to keep him on the roster. He said he had a great preseason and offseason too, really. He took big steps and earned his way to be here. We'll see where it goes. It's not written in stone, but he did all he could to get to this point. And I mean, I was saying this throughout the preseason as well. You could roll the tape back if you don't believe me, but he was one that I thought just looked excellent all around. He looked like I was always pleased with his positioning, especially. He wasn't getting the same offensive output, especially that we saw from Felix, but even from Bradley Nadeau. He wasn't putting up the same offensive numbers, but positionally, there were things I noticed that he was doing he looked like an NHL player.
He wasn't afraid to grind on the boards either, which was nice to see.
He's a winger, and if the center was forechecking, I tried to combine those two words, but if the center was forechecking along the boards or in deep behind the net, he would cycle up and kind of hang out in the middle near the blue line, kind of fill in the center spot. So little things like that, just being in the right position. Like, yeah, you're the winger, so your primary purpose is to lead the forecheck there. But if the specifics of that play call for the center to be up, then you cover for him. That's the way it works, and you have to be able to do that, not just to play in the NHL, but specifically to play in Rob Brindamore's system. You need everybody on the same page, and he definitely seemed to be. So it definitely looks like he's earned it to this point. I will say, though, on Monday I wrote something for the Storm Surge Pod website, stormsurgepod.com, and at that point, that was right after Jackson Blake had been sent back down to Chicago for the opening roster. And so I kind of wrote a piece about that, talking about how Tulski had hinted at larger roles for some of the younger guys on the roster back at the start of free agency. And then what I put was fast forward to today, and Jackson Blake, the last of the top prospects still on the roster, is assigned to the AHL as the last roster move made. And thankfully, I'm okay with it. Truthfully, I'm okay with it. So the most likely landing spot would have been fourth line right wing. This role does not give him enough opportunity to continue his development. He's played in a single professional game in his career, and while it would be great to see him in a Kane sweater on opening night, it would be much less great to see him only out there for 6 to 8 minutes a night. Mm-hmm. He'll be much better off playing top line minutes in Chicago, playing 18 to 20 minutes per game, playing on the power play and penalty kill, and have the opportunity to develop the entirety of his game. And I still believe that to a certain extent. So provided that he's limited to 6 to 8 minutes per night in the NHL.
Yep.
Looks like he's getting work on the power play, on the second power play unit, according to practice today. If they roll four lines rather than kind of prioritizing the top two or three, and they give that fourth line 8 to 10, 5-on-5 minutes per night, plus whatever minute of power play time he gets per game on average, and if he's averaging closer to 11 to 12, I think that that's fine for him to stay in the NHL if he's staying at 11, 12 minutes a night on average and getting some power play work. Mm-hmm. If it starts dropping below that, especially if it starts getting to eight or less, that's when I'd go ahead and send him down, let him continue to get a lot of work and to develop some more.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with that. I think it'll be interesting to see how Roslovic, if he sticks up in the top, you know, top line or that second line, if that works out, that's great. If not, I would be interested to see if Jackson Blake continues to put in the same amount of effort we've seen I mean, he looks really comfortable with the puck on his stick. He looks just comfortable all around. He may end up. Yep. Yeah. He may end up. He could get some good minutes if he ends up. You know, depending on how things work out on those top two lines. But
yeah,
I definitely agree with it. It's all about playing time at this point. There's no reason to have him with the Hurricanes unless he's playing meaningful minutes.
Yep.
Gotcha. All right. So anything else you guys want to say about roster before we move on?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah. So I do, before we move on to our preview of Friday's game, I do want to bring up, so there's different articles ESPN's put out on outlook for the season, but sadly we're going to look at the negative one. So Greg Wachinski, he put out an article saying that he thinks the Canes are not even going to make the playoffs this year. So my question is, having read it, do you agree, or do you agree with the points he made, or do you think he's out in left field?
Sorry, yeah, I think he makes some very valid points. He makes valid points. I just don't know. Even towards the end of his article, he says he's probably very wrong, and he hopes he's wrong. I would agree with him on that point specifically.
I wholeheartedly agree with him when he says he's probably wrong.
No, I the points he makes are valid points, right? Like, there's a lot of turnover on this roster. He's saying you're replacing guys like Brady Shea and Brett Pesce with guys who aren't as good as those two. And there's a lot of turnover, but I think the way they play, they're still hard to beat. Yeah, I'm not saying I agree with him. Especially when you take into consideration the contracts they both received at other places. But I disagree that they're not a playoff team, especially watching them. Like, they looked sharp in the preseason when they were all playing together. I don't think they'll win the division necessarily. It's not out of the question that they could. But I think they'll be top three in the division for sure.
I'd say they'll be top three in the division. I don't think that they win it this year.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a surprise. They didn't win it last year either with that really good roster that included Guentzel. Rangers were just too far ahead. But I'm pulling up some stuff because something that he said, I'm less convinced that Sean Walker and Shane Gostisbehere make up for what they lost on the blue line. And I think I disagree with that. So Brady Shea was great as a Hurricane. He set some career highs in points. This past season, 47 points. That was a career high. Almost 40 each of the two seasons before that, his highest since his rookie year. 38 and 39 in each of those two seasons. He scored 18 goals 2 years ago, 13 last year as a guy who you don't expect to score goals, according to ESPN. Yeah, 31 goals in those last two seasons he was here, but 47 points last year. And on the power play, he had, let's see, one goal and 11 assists, so 12 power play points. Shane Gostisbehere for a not nearly as good Detroit team had 56 points last year, 10 goals, which is just three fewer, but 46 assists, with 13 more assists. On the power play, he had twice as many goals with two. and 19 assists for a total of 21 power play points to Shea's 12. As far as the offensive upside that Shea brings, and I'll definitely concede that Shea is a better all-around defenseman than Gostisbehere is, but the upside, the things that nobody else on the roster provides, you don't need a guy who's perfectly well-rounded, and you have Jacob Slavin there as well. But to have a guy that can score almost 60 points as a defenseman on a mediocre Detroit team last season, here, run our power play one, give him Aho, Jarvis, Svechnikov, and Natchez to play with on that power play, and I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to see him put up another 20 to 25 power play points again this season.
I do.
So to me,
the
I'm just going to wrap that up real quick. To me, the extra benefit we get on that particular skill set from that particular roster position at a significantly lower price, $7 million per year for 7 years for Shea versus I think 3.15 for 3 years for Gostisbehere. To me, that's a much better use of money. We get the upside of what we need without losing that much on the side that we already have covered with our other defensemen.
Yeah, and you're not blocking a spot for Nikishin, hopefully at the end of the season.
That too.
Yeah. The so the other day on Kaniac Report, so they actually, one of the Sams was out. They had Brandon, I forget what podcast he's normally on, but he mentioned, so he didn't mention exactly the numbers he ran, but he ran some of his own numbers and comparing Brady Shea versus Ghost. Ghost is actually, according to him, an improvement from Shea. I mean, not like major, you know, but it's pretty comparable, but a slight step up.
Overall or specifically on the offensive side?
I think more so on the offensive, but but at least to him, it still was, you know, the like I said, he didn't say the exact numbers, but the, even on the defensive side, he said they were pretty comparable. So that's just a point. And then also this
defensive is a little harder to measure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see where he's coming from. I mean, at a basic stat level, Ghost was minus 16 last season on a not great Detroit team where he had to kind of lead the defense a little bit.
Who's our goalie?
Shea was exactly. while Shea was a plus 15. So at a basic level, that looks pretty different, but there's obviously much better ways to judge somebody's defensive abilities.
Oh yeah.
Takeaways, watch shots, stuff like that.
And then also just to regurgitate others' opinions even more. Shane Willis, he brought up, which I guess near the trade deadline last year, he had already mentioned that we should go after Sean Walker. And then he brought it up again, I think last week on Kane's Cast that he had said that, and then, you know, look at, we didn't trade for him, but we got him in the offseason, so, and on a good contract, so we actually did better the way we did, but, so yeah, so they, I mean, according to Mike and Shane, they think we're still cup contenders.
I see it too. That, I was also going to talk about Walker versus Pesci, and especially considering that Pesci's contract was, what, 5x5 or 5x5.5? With New Jersey,
something like that.
Whereas Walker's is his 5 years as well, but for 3.5. I have Hockey Reference up, not Puckpedia, but
I want to say Walker's was like significantly lower than Pesci's.
It was at least 1.5 to 2 million less.
Yeah.
But looking at some of the more defensive stats, obviously neither of these guys are really known for their offense, though Walker did put up 29 points last year. And the year before, so two straight 29-point seasons. That's two separate lines right there. Never mind. He had 13 points the year before. So 29 points between Colorado and Philadelphia last year to Pesci's 13 points last season. He had a down year. He had 30 the year before. So Pesci typically has been closer, 25, 28, and 30 each of the 3 years before that. So Pesci had a down year. Walker had a good year. But anyway, Walker had 29 points to Pesci's 13. But then when you look at more of the defensive stats, because that's what each one of these is more known for, Walker had 50 penalty minutes to Pesci's 20, so he might be a little tougher to play against. And we know that's the case actually from these next ones I'm about to talk about. Walker had 127 blocked shots to Pesci's 113. This one's huge right here. Walker had 118 hits last season compared to Pesci's 25. He had 41 takeaways to Pesci's 35, 25 giveaways to Pesci's 18. So a little bit more on the giveaway side, but I mean, just from the physicality, the takeaways, he's got more block shots, but to me it's the hits and the improved ability to block shots. Pesci was also playing over 20 minutes a night. Walker was playing just over 19. He did play more games because Pesci did miss some time due to injury, but I don't think Walker is a step down from Pesci at all. I think that's actually the one that's even closer than Gostisbehere for Shea, as far as what we're getting, and for cheaper. So yeah. I think that both, I'm not worried at all about the moves on defense. The only thing I'm somewhat worried about is what we weren't able to retain in Guentzel, but we had him for only a third of the season anyway. So it's not like it's a major piece that we're losing. It's just something we weren't able to keep.
Yeah.
So we were good before him and we'll be good after him.
Awesome. All right. So let's, thinking of Guentzel, let's take a look at how bad we're going to beat him on Friday. I do. I mean, I don't, obviously it's a new season. So we don't know exactly what we're looking at. I mean, we can speculate, but all I know is I really hope Guentzel sucks.
Good luck.
Yeah, I don't have high hopes, but I'm excited to hear all the boos.
I hope we get them. So real quick, before we talk too much about that and talking about the boos, Guentzel, I think, is the one guy that should hear them. Yeah. And it's not that he really deserves them. There's guys that deserve it a whole lot more, not on the Hurricanes this particular offseason, but in the past, like guys like Eric Holla, for instance, really deserve the boos. There's a few others as far as former Canes go, but Guentzel's up there as well. He's not egregious, but just the it's kind of like the way that you would boo a girlfriend that you know was like after the fact should have broken up with you 2 months before she actually did, and you're like, man, why'd you make me suffer those extra 2 months? I could have been happier earlier had you just gotten this over with instead of teasing me that it was still going to happen for the extra 2 months. Not speaking from personal experience. And so to me, it's that just cut the team. Just let them, like, hey, I'm not going to re-sign. Go ahead and focus on other people. Maybe, I mean, who knows? Maybe we would have approached other parts of the offseason differently if we had known back in May rather than the last weekend of June that there was no chance of retaining him. And so that's why I'm like, hey, be respectful. Just move on. Don't talk about how much you like it here. Just to say, there's no amount of money you can give me that'll make me stay. Just let it go. And the reason I bring that up is at the community game against Nashville, I was hearing a few pockets of boos every time Shea had the puck.
Oh, yeah,
and I want to let everybody know, don't you dare do that during the regular season. Brady Shea has done nothing
that's ridiculous.
To earn boos.
Yeah. I mostly heard, I wondered what was going to happen, but that Preds game, when they showed him on the screen, at least from where I was sitting, I heard a lot of cheering. So
yes, when they showed him on the screen, there was a lot of cheering. And so it was absolutely 95% to 98% cheering for him and happy to see him. But the small percentage that was booing whenever he touched the puck, don't do that anymore.
Yeah, please. That's crazy.
And don't do that on Tuesday for Nason or for Pesci.
Yeah.
Don't do that when Chicago's in town for Turbo. Guentzel's the only one you can do that for this year. And
yeah.
If he's healthy when they play here.
Yeah, that's wild. No,
it was very wild. Few. So it's not a huge deal, but to those few, hey, just know that you were wrong and don't do it anymore.
Yeah,
as Michael Jordan would say, stop it, get some help.
Yeah.
All right. So besides Guentzel, what are we? You know, it'll be interesting to see Tampa without Stamkos. But so, what are we looking at?
I'm not gonna lie, it'll be interesting to see that top line of Guentzel, Point, and Kucherov. That's tough for anyone. if you can keep them off the board, that's their whole team at this point.
And I was going to say, to me, that top line is the reason that Svechnikov is not on the line with Aho and Jarvis.
Yeah.
It's because you need all three guys to be capable defensively. Svech has made some progress there, but he's... I don't want him to be the last forward back if Aho gets caught in a pinch.
When Svech is physical, though, he's like...
On the forecheck, especially, yeah.
Yeah, he'll take over game. Like, he completely flips games when he plays, like, a full power forward game. So that would be interesting to see him against him if he plays that way. With their skill and speed and stuff, I don't know how you...
Yeah, those guys can beat you too easily to rely on if he gets that.
So, yeah, I'm interested to see how, if they can be stopped, one. If you can, they don't have the depth they have had in the past. But you have to take advantage when you can.
Yep. I think I want to keep an eye on defensive pairings as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know we had some concerns about Burns down the stretch last season. Is he starting to lose a step or anything like that? I definitely want to keep an eye on if maybe we start switching out Slavin with Walker anytime those guys are on the ice to try to get a better matchup there. But just something to keep an eye on. It's early in the season, so maybe Burns still has his feet, but he's getting up there. He's an ancient 40-year-old at this point, maybe 39.
Yeah, I feel like there's a sweet spot for Burns, like 20 games into the season. He's like an old diesel truck where you have to, like, you know, give it a while to get going. And then eventually, you know, once you're rolling, you can't stop. And then, like, once you stop, you're done. You're broken down.
Oh, man. That's my dad's old truck. Yeah. 99 Chevy or a 99 Ford.
But yeah, I think I'll be interested to see how the team does against that top line specifically. That's tough. I think the Hurricanes are a deeper, more well-rounded team, honestly.
Yep.
Than the Lightning, they have that top line, and then after that, there's not much that scares me. Victor Hedman's like their only defenseman that's like name recognition at this point.
Right. I mean, Ryan McDonough is like
a 100-year-old, you know. Yeah.
Right. Remember his history. But.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be a fun game. I think the Canes being at home obviously helps. I'm sure Tampa is very happy that they were able to leave a couple days early and avoid the hurricane. Hopefully, Tampa avoids.
Yeah, I think they flew up Monday night.
Damage and stuff, but.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I said dodge one hurricane to get hit by another.
Oh, gosh.
Heyo.
Too soon.
So too soon?
It made landfall about an hour ago. Is that too soon?
Yeah, too soon.
All right, so give me, I know this is going to be super tough, but so last question tonight, give me your score prediction for Friday night. Maybe you'll start, we didn't do this last season, maybe we'll do this year. Wow. And maybe we'll have a tally at the end of the year, and whoever gets the most right, the other two will have to buy him dinner. We'll see.
Oh my goodness.
How about who's the starting goalie?
Don't know yet.
No, that's
it. I mean, I'm saying, who do you think?
Oh, I think Anderson's the starter.
Probably. I think it should be Kochetkov, but
yeah, I'm hoping Kochetkov.
I'm okay with either, but I think
I'm still not backing off my question though. I want to know your best guess.
No, that's fine. You want the final score?
Yeah, final score.
Yeah, 4-3 Canes in overtime.
I was going to say 5-3 Canes regulation with an empty net goal.
Hope so.
I'm going to go. It's tough. So part of this is I look back at, so 10 episodes or a little more than that, we did our guesses on the top first 10 games of opening night. And Spencer, you predicted a win. Dylan, you predicted a loss. I predicted a win. I don't know now. I think I might go overtime loss. I think it's going to be 3-2. Sadly, I think we'll lose our opening night.
Yeah, you do know this is a Hurricanes podcast, right? Nobody wants to hear
that. Yeah, you can't,
I know they
you
don't
can't
want
predict
to.
A loss, Taylor. Come on.
But I also look, it's just like on College Game Day when they all predict the same team. Normally, they're all wrong. So I'm partly just taking a bullet for us.
Just so you know, there's not a single game this season where I'm going to pick us to lose.
Yeah.
And that's same. Fine. Well, I'll figure out. We'll before we record the next one, we'll come. So maybe this one won't count, but we'll be guessing for 81 games. We'll come up with some competition between the three of us.
I'm fine with this one, too. Let's do 82.
That's fair. So, yeah. So I'm going to write these down real quick. Well, I guess I can go back.
Only we had some sort of shared document that we all had access to and could see this on a updated live basis.
Oh, I know. That's where I'm doing it. Okay, so Spencer, you said, what did you say?
5-3 Canes.
5-3 Canes. Dylan, what did you say?
I said 4-3 overtime.
4-3 overtime Canes.
Probably Jake Gensel hat trick.
don't say that.
And I'm going 3-2 overtime. Lightning. I hate to do it, but that's fine. I'll take the booze. I really hope I'm wrong. Call me Greg Wachinski.
#2OT Lightning.
Yep. So that, just so you know, the Lightning have been living in a hotel in Chapel Hill since Monday, so they're not going to be having fun by Friday.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I guess not circumstances, but...
So, what's a witch's favorite spell in school? Oh gosh, I messed up the joke already. See, it shows how tired I am. It's supposed to be what subject? I'll do a different one. What do you call a funny mountain?
A hill areas.
There you go. Yep, I couldn't even bless my heart. Struggle bust. All right.
The other one you were trying to say, a witch's favorite subject is spelling.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's been a long day. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Storm Surge of Carolina Hurricanes podcast on the Believe Network. We really appreciate you. We're going to try we're going to start doing 3 episodes a week. If all things go according to plan, we are going to record a short episode after the game Friday night. So we'll have an episode for you on Saturday. But yeah, thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you again soon. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Storm Surge of Carolina Hurricanes podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Palace Point and RCE Theaters and Chase Given Music. We'd also like to thank the Believe Network for letting us be a part of them. Please be sure to like, follow, and subscribe wherever you're listening. Also, please comment and leave a 5-star rating. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at StormSurge_pod. And be sure to check out our website, StormSurgePod.com, for more news and great articles. Feel free to interact with us and ask us questions on any of our social media and on the website. We'd love to answer those on the podcast. Thanks again, and we look forward to joining you again next episode.